Here's the pitch, and it's driven to right. If it's fair, it's probably gone right down the line, and it is fair and gone. And a home run for Santander. A towering drive. Right-hander is at the belt. Runner goes from first. The pitch is driven to deep center. Blade going back. He's at the track, right to the wall. He'll watch, and it's gone. And a three-run home run by Kerstad. And the Orioles jump in front 4-0 over the A's in the first inning. Here's Bedeau down to the belt. And the 2-2 pitch, ready, it's on the way, and it's swung on line to center for a base hit at 6-3. So Mateo scores, motoring up to second is Urias, and Gunnar Henderson delivers his 61st RBI.
The highlights, courtesy of A's Television, and Orioles get off to a big start as both Anthony Santander and Heston Kerstad homer in the first inning. They get one more in the third and one in the ninth. Hold on for a 6-3 win. Grayson Rodriguez, his 11th win, which is tied for the league lead. Craig Kimbrel, not an all-star. Incredibly so. 23rd save, ERA at 2.10. A pretty clean ninth. He did give up one base hit, but struck out two and got his 23rd save. The Orioles win 2-3 in Oakland, 2-3 in Seattle. Go 4-2 on the road trip, and I think we'd all signed up for that.
That's the biggest thing. Keep winning series, Ken, and that's what the Orioles continue to do. And getting off to a fast start, I felt like was a huge thing, considering the prior night, the A's hung a 19-spot.
They had a 10-spot before you blinked.
Yeah, that was a very uncompetitive game. But for the Orioles, they went out, scored 4 runs in the first inning. All 4 of those runs scored after 2 outs. And it was really, really big getting that going, and then the offense kind of went through a lull, ended up scoring in the ninth. But the bullpen, man, following Grayson Rodriguez, who had a very strong outing, Jacob Webb, man, Rock Cabaco put out a piece about Webb and really the bullpen in general on MassinSports.com. Left-handed hitters against Jacob Webb this year, Ken, 5-53. Really remarkable there, and he's been very good with inherited runners. Cano, a clean inning for him, and Kimbrel. So the bullpen was really good following Grayson.
How about the fact that Webb only threw 9 pitches? And remember, he had to throw extra pitches because the double play ball that wasn't. Like, it's the pitch efficiency for him in that seventh inning was incredible. And Grayson Rodriguez, we'll get to him a little bit later, but man, was he good. But you're right, the whole bullpen. Cano had the walk, but struck out too. And I thought he struck out the guy he walked. Like, he did not get, it was bottom of the strike zone. That's a pitcher wants. And looked like a strike in the box, but did not get it. But he looked good again. And that's a couple in a row that have been nice for him after, like, he had a struggle in the Texas series a little bit. Cano looks like he's coming into form.
Yes, absolutely. Is he the guy that was the all-star a year ago? No, but he's definitely coming into form, which is a good sign. And the all-star snubs, if you will. I mean, Anthony Santander leaving an imprint on this game. And then Craig Kimbrel, who you mentioned, Ken, 1 earned run now in his last 21 innings. And I mean, his numbers this year, who would have thought the beginning of May when Brandon Hyde removed him from the closer role that his numbers would be as good as they are right now? I mean, Kimbrel, he's been lights out for them.
He's a hell of a lot better than Clay Holmes, who got the commissioner's office, whatever that is, vote.
That's made up. I've never even heard of that before.
I don't know what that is.
Is he best friends with Rob Manfred? Yeah. Tell me what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what it means at all. I feel like Jordan Westberg is a snub, and I think he got squeezed by the fact that Paredes is Tampa's only rep. Simeon is Texas only, like, infielders. Like, I feel like he should be on the team, and maybe somebody drops out and he does get on the team. I don't know how David Fry got on there ahead of Jordan Westberg or Santander, but he's had a nice year. Maybe Kyle Tucker drops out. He hadn't played in a month, and maybe Santander gets a spot. To me, the biggest snub is Kimbrel, who Kimbrel made the All-Star team a year ago. His numbers are much better across the board this year than they were a year ago at this time.
Yeah, and Ken, what has he got, 22 saves?
23.
Now? 23 saves on the season, where he had 23 saves all of last year, Ken. I mean, he's on pace to easily reached the most amount of saves he's had in a season since 2018 with the Red Sox, where he recorded 42.
And you made the point, he lost the job for a couple weeks, and he still got 23 saves. Like, he's been really good. And since that lull where he wasn't good, what's he given up, one earned run since?
One earned run in 21 innings.
And
that one earned run was the Yankees game, ended up being a blown save. Orioles ended up winning that game anyways in extras. But, I mean, he's been awesome for them.
Speaking of awesome, Gunnar Henderson, don't look now, but he's hitting .293. Gunnar Henderson, he's brought his batting average up, it seems like 30 points in the last month plus. Like, I remember we were talking in the bullpen. We were at Orsman, and somebody came up to us during the break, and we were talking about Gunnar for MVP, and he's like, when's the last time a guy hit .260 and won the MVP? Well, now he's hitting .293.
He's a freak show, and the five balls in play for Gunnar Henderson yesterday, 109.2 miles per hour, 106.7, 106.3, 112.5, and 99.5 miles per hour exit velocity. So all five of them pretty much over 100 miles per hour. He's dialed in, man. I mean, he's just the meteoric rise that Gunnar Henderson has been on. And, you know, this can even predate the AL Rookie of the Year, where, I mean, coming out of nowhere to being the number one prospect in baseball and then coming up right away, making an impact for that club down the stretch in 2022. Had the rough April last year, but ever since then, mid-May last year, he has been an absolute stud.
He hit .342 in June. He's hitting .360 so far in July.
That's it?
Yeah. So, he's killing it. And it's interesting timing because I feel like Adley is, I wouldn't call it a slump, but he's a little bit of a funk. And you could tell he's frustrated. He dropped an F-bomb that the mics picked up yesterday after a pop out. And you heard Kevin Brown say, Adley not pleased with the his swing there, because I think he thought he should have hit the ball much harder and further than he did. But alas, 2 of 3, and we'll get to the Kate Povich of it all next segment as well. They get killed on Saturday. But again, take 2 of 3 there, take 2 of 3 in Seattle. You win 4 of 6. Oh, and you're 3 games up in the division with 6 games to play before the All-Star game.
Yeah, and now you got a 6-game homestand. The Cubs come to town, then the Yankees come to town this weekend. Yankees have lost 6 straight series.
They've lost 15 to 20.
Yeah, they are in a serious, serious funk. So the O's, they have a 3-game lead in the AL East, and hopefully they can build on that over the next 6 games.
How do you turn a 3-game deficit into a 3-game lead? The other team loses 15 to 20. That's like it seems like 30 seconds ago they were up 3.5, and now the Orioles are up 3 games.
And we've seen really for years now with the Yankees these kind of prolonged slumps in the middle of the year around this time. And I mean, they're going through it again, man. There is a lot wrong with the Yankees. I mean, Luis Gil at least bounced back yesterday. But, boy, I mean, they can't buy a series win.
Yeah, they'll be a desperate team when they come to Camden Yards on Friday. We have a huge Monday show. By the way, Jason on vacation this week. He will be back on Monday. Guest-wise, Ravens training camp. Rookies report in 5 days. Training camp begins on the 20th, so that's 12 days away. We'll check in with our buddy Jonas Schaefer, covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner at 3:30. Orioles, day off today after going 4-2 on the road trip. We'll talk to Matt Weyrich, who covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun at 4. We'll check in with our buddy Mark Viviano, WJZ Channel 13. He hasn't retired yet, so we'll still get his thoughts on the O's and maybe the Ravens at 4:30. And longtime MLB insider for USA Today, Bob Nightingale. What are the Orioles going to do? The trade deadline is 3 weeks from tomorrow. We'll get Bob's thoughts at 5 o'clock.
It's a fun time to be a Baltimore sports fan, man. I mean, the O's, they got the most wins in the American League right now. The trade deadline a few weeks away. Ravens rookies reporting to one winning drive this weekend. Let's ride, Ken.
Are you concerned at all about the Red Sox, who are sitting 7.5 games back?
They're surging, man. I mean, they're
surging. If I asked you, like, and maybe we put this a poll, who are you more worried about, the Yankees or the Red Sox? I wonder, where would you go with that?
Yeah. I mean, they're a team that's very much overachieving. That defense is still pretty horrible, though, Ken, for the Red Sox. But there is a lot wrong
pitching,
with the Yankees.
They can run.
What's interesting, though, is Buster Olney during Sunday Night Baseball last night was kind of saying that the Red Sox are still non-committal about how they're going to approach this trade deadline. And obviously, they're firmly in the mix. They own a wild card spot right now. They're within shouting distance of the Yankees. I mean, I think you kind of go for it a little bit if you're the Red Sox.
Coming up next, we'll take a look at the pitching over the weekend. How good was Grayson Rodriguez? How bad was Cade Povich? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
This is more for me who he is. I think that was just a kind of a hiccup that most guys are going to have. Everybody's not going to be perfect every time out. And I think it's his 11th win on the season. That's for a guy in his first full year. It's unbelievable at the right before the break, and it's just getting better and better.
Brandon Hyde talking about Grayson Rodriguez. He's 11-3, tied for the league lead. Six innings, six hits, one walk, three earned runs. This thing's got a little hairy for him in the sixth, and he was dominant until the sixth. Eight strikeouts. Brandon Hyde sent him back out for the seventh. He gave up two ground ball singles, and his day was done. And the A's got that third run in the seventh. If not for a bad throw from Gunnar Henderson, that line says six innings, two earned runs.
Yeah, Grayson was really, really sharp, and you could tell ran out of gas at the end. He had the walk, he had the hit-by-pitch in the sixth inning, but was still able to deliver a quality start, Ken, and that poor outing in Texas or in Houston really feels like forever ago at this point, because he's gone seven innings, two earned against the Guardians, six and a third shutout against the Mariners, and then, of course, six innings, three earned runs yesterday. He got 17 swing and miss, but with Grayson, I mean, the changeup is just the bread and butter. I mean, you look at his numbers of the season on his changeup. Batters are just hitting 160, slugging 277 off his changeup the entire season.
By the way, breaking news, the Orioles announced that Katie Griggs will serve as the first female president of business operations. She just resigned from the same position with the Mariners. So she's now coming. I think she's from the East Coast, coming east. So the Orioles have a new head of business operations. Obviously, I think John was in charge of that. Wasn't he sort of like the business aspect under the prior ownership? But alas, back to Grayson Rodriguez. And I'm incredibly impressed with him. I think his ERA is bloated by his two of his three losses were awful. And that's why the ERA is at 3.5. But man, oh man, when he's good, he's really good.
Yeah, and he was just dialed in from the get-go. I mean, the first five innings, he was pretty much just cruising. I believe he had 71 pitches through five before running into that bit of trouble. But, you know, I go back to what we were saying a couple weeks ago when Bradish ended up going down, where Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez have to carry this starting rotation until expected reinforcements come in. And that's exactly what both of them have done. I mean, Grayson tied for the league lead in wins despite a stint on the IL.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive what Grayson Rodriguez has done. Let's get to the other side of the coin, though. Cade Povich. Cade Povich on Saturday. One inning pitched, five hits, three walks, eight earned runs. Did have 1K, gave up 2 3-run homers. The ERA jumps all the way to 6.51. Orioles lose 19-8 on Saturday. And Cade Povich, we talked about his first start in Toronto where he was the line wasn't as
better
than the line.
Yeah.
He was just as bad as that line says. First two hitters walked. Nobody took the bat off their shoulder until he gave up the 3-run homer to Rooker in the first inning. Gives up another 3-run homer to Schumann in the second inning. This game was over before you blinked. The Orioles were down 10-0 after two.
He was completely non-competitive. I mean, he couldn't find a strike zone. And Ken, he threw 43 pitches. He didn't have one swing and miss. That is hard to do. 43 pitches, didn't have one swing and miss. And extremely small sample size, six starts. But the home road splits are drastic. You got three starts each, three home, three away. And you look at the ERA, the whip. I mean, the whip is almost double from a 108 to a 209. The 16 and two-thirds giving up 5 earned runs compared to 11 innings, 15 earned runs. Obviously, that's very bloated because of that start that just happened. But what's interestingly enough, the walks. He only has one walk in the 3 home starts compared to 12 on the road. And obviously, that's the knock on him coming from the minors. But yeah, very drastic splits.
Yeah, I know we were talking in the bullpen, and you said a buddy of yours said they got to send him down. Well, send him down for who?
That's
like until they get somebody at the deadline, he's in the rotation. You can't put Cole Irvin back in the rotation. Like, this is a bad start for a young kid. You got to come back to him. I am a little surprised the way they've set up the rotation for the last 6 days. With the day off, why isn't Burns starting tomorrow?
And then you get him in the Yankees.
And then you get him in on Sunday. He gets 2 starts in the homestand. Now, I would assume, and I'm not saying he doesn't have the right to this, but it's probably his choice to pitch Wednesday and then be able to pitch in the All-Star game, and that's all fine and good. I'd like to have him once in each series.
For sure. And you know, obviously the prior series against the Yankees ended up working out, but they didn't pitch Grayson Rodriguez or Corbin Burns in that 3-game series. They still took 2 of 3. Grayson, he's obviously scheduled to pitch on Saturday. I was definitely a little surprised about that too, Ken. But in terms of Povich, look, we expect Mike Elias to bring in at a minimum 1 starter.
Yes.
If not more. Is Povich Friday, he would be on turn to pitch. Is that a big start for him? Sure. But I mean, nothing can be done because what is the alternative? I mean, you saw Cole Irvin, 4 innings, 5 earned runs following.
And they gave him 4 starts where he was bad. Like, you can't pull Povich after 1.
Exactly. And Suarez, you hope that he's been able to turn things around long term. Would you want to see him in the pen? Absolutely. But I mean, what are you going to bring up Chase McDermott and start him in Povich's play?
He didn't go through an inning.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. And what we've seen from Povich in these 6 starts, I mean, it was horrible on Saturday, but I still feel like we've seen more good than bad with Povich.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, he's young.
Yeah.
And you're going to have growing pains with a young pitcher. And yeah, was it ugly? Yes. Well, did it ruin my Saturday afternoon? A little bit. Like, you're sitting down, you want to watch a baseball game. Margie came downstairs, she goes, 10-0. What the hell's going on? I had a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, it's over before it started, but I'm not willing to say, okay, that's it for Cade Povich off of 1 bad start. And his next start comes at home as a lefty with the big wall. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, and going up against the Yankees club, in which I thought that was one of his more gutsy starts that he's had. And that was at Yankee Stadium. Walks were an issue there. He had 5 of them, but only 1 hit, 1 earned run against the Yankees. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how he's going to bounce back. Because really, you know, that was by far and away his worst start. And you look at the Blue Jays start, the first outing, and you look at all the defensive errors that we saw, and that's why we thought that he pitched better than his line.
Yankees have really 2 guys in Soto and Judge. Ben Rice is starting to hit. Ben Rice had 3 homers on Saturday.
Now he's been their leadoff.
So, because Volpe's not hitting at all.
No.
So, yeah, I'm fine with Povich pitching over the weekend against the Yankees. I just would have liked to have Corbin Burns having 2 shots to start. Having your ace, your all-star pitcher, I would have liked 2 starts during the homestand. That's just me. Maybe I'm a little nutty.
I'm with you, Ken.
He's on turn to pitch tomorrow, but he's not going to pitch till Wednesday.
Yeah. Giving him an extra. And look, who knows? Like you said, Ken, he could have went to Brandon Hyde. Mike Elias said, hey, I want to pitch in this all-star game. And he did kind of reference saying, you never know how many of these you're going to get. So obviously it's meaningful to him. And I would think that he probably had that conversation.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the rule is now, if he would have went Tuesday, Sunday, he'd be ineligible to pitch
exactly.
in the All-Star game.
That's the exact point.
Yeah, so yeah. That's I would I would think it came from him. And, you know, hey, let's take 4-6 on the homestand yeah. and the rest will worry at worst. And then the we'll worry about everything else when it happens. It's Inside Access here on a Monday. Jason off. He'll be back next Monday. Coming up next. Can you believe we're less than 2 weeks away from training camp? The Ravens rookies report on the 13th. Training camp kicks off on the 20th. With the rookies coming in less than a week, who are the rookies we're most excited to see at this training camp? We'll give you our thoughts next here on The Fan.
With the 30th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Nate Wiggins, defensive back, Clemson.
We take you back to draft night where the Ravens took Nate Wiggins, the speedy, skinny corner from Clemson in the first round. And we bring that up because the rookies report for training camp in just 5 days. And with that in mind, Bone, who are you looking forward to seeing rookie-wise at this training camp?
Obviously, everyone's excited to see a first-round pick every single year. So, I mean, you can start with Nate Wiggins. And something that I'm interested in seeing, I know you are too, Ken, is, hey, the competitive juice is flowing, those one-on-one matchups. We know that Nate Wiggins is not one to lack confidence. So I think going up against Zay Flowers, which is both of them similar body types. But, you know, what does he look like from the get-go? What does he look like when pads come on? You know, that's everyone's biggest concern with Wiggins. Yeah. Is that size going to hold up? How is he going to perform in run support? How is he going to perform in open field tackling? So Wiggins is the obvious one. But, I mean, a lot of these guys have, you know, plenty of interest for me. I mean, Roger Rosengarten, is he going to be ready for primetime? Is he going to be ready to start week one against the Chiefs at right tackle? And, you know, Adisa Isaac, what is his role going to be? Is he going to prove that he could be a rotational pass rusher for this team?
No, the obvious are there. And Wiggins, I am curious to see how long before somebody takes a swing at Nate Wiggins. I think in the heat of summer, these drills get started. He is not one to back down. And if it doesn't happen during actual camp, I think it's going to happen when they have one of these practices against another team before.
The Packers.
Yeah, the Packers. Yes. DeVontaze Walker. I want to see what this kid. Tez Walker was a kid that transferred to Carolina. He wasn't eligible at first. Finally got his shot, played very well. Fourth round pick. I'm interested to see what he looks like. I've been telling you this for a while. I want to see what TJ Tampa looks like because he's one of those guys where the mock drafts and the NFL team sort of differed, and we'll find out who's right here. But TJ Tampa, they got two corners, Wiggins and Tampa. And how good are these kids early? Because let's face it, Marlon Humphrey, his birthday is today, by the way.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Marlon. And hopefully his birthday present is health because he did not have it a year ago, Bum.
And hopefully he's ready to go day one or else the alarms will be going off for me a little bit. But no, both of those guys as well. And DeVontaze Walker, the 4.36 speed, where this receiving core right now, Ken, I mean, do they have a guy that can consistently take the top off a defense? And you know, Bateman, they took a lot of deep shots with him last year, but just didn't have much success when Lamar threw to him. Zay, not necessarily his forte, and same with Nelson Aguilar. Where can DeVontaze Walker as a rookie provide this offense with some splash plays? Because they don't really have that guy that can stretch the field.
No, it's not Rashad Bateman. As much as they try for it to be Rashad Bateman, I think that ship has sailed. If there's going to be a splash guy, unless it's Isaiah Likely down the seam kind of thing, maybe. But of the wide receivers, it's Zay's more of a yak guy. It's not Aguilar, as you said, and I'm sorry. I can't see how it's Rashad Bateman at this point. It's got to be Walker.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a I'll believe it when I see it with Rashad Bateman for whatever reason. And it's not all on Bateman, but Lamar and Bateman just have not been on the same page. Hopefully, both of them can stay healthy and get a full training camp together, and that can maybe help their chemistry out.
Yeah, if they both could stay healthy, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun, Ken. That would be fun. And then you get to the later round guys where Rasheen Ali, we know that he had a lot of explosive plays in his college career, but what's the issue with him? Fumbles. And we know that John Harbaugh, and really what head coach is fond of them.
Nah.
But that's how you can quickly get in the doghouse for John Harbaugh. But who knows? I mean, he might have an opportunity, Ken, especially early on in the season, where, you know, you got Justice Hill, of course, and Keaton Mitchell. He's not going to be ready week one. John Harbaugh pretty much said that. Early on in the season, if Keaton Mitchell's on PUP, I mean, Ali, if he sticks
Ali,
on special teams,
yeah.
I mean, he could be up come game day.
No, Ali's an interesting one because of the Keaton Mitchell situation. And Keaton Mitchell will likely not be ready for the start of the season. And who is going to be, like, could he give them some third down value? We've talked a lot about how Derrick Henry doesn't play a lot of third downs. Could Ali be the guy? Because Justice Hill is fine, but he's not really an explosive guy. He's not going to give you what Keaton Mitchell could give you. Could Ali possibly give them a little of that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a shot. And first things first, for Ali, he's got to find a way to stick on special teams. That way he can stay active as that number three running back. And assuming he is able to do that, yeah, I mean, I think he'd be in the mix for some touches here and there during games. And then, obviously, we're going to keep an eye on Devin Leary during the preseason.
Hey, I like the way he threw the ball when I was out there. He throws it better than Josh Johnson, but like, I don't know.
But with Leary, if you're Eric DaCosta, if you're John Harbaugh, the hope would be that he's your backup quarterback in 2025. Now, they did pass that new rule, Ken, where even though, let's just say hypothetically, Devin Leary's on the team's practice squad and they only carry those two quarterbacks,
he can dress.
He can still dress, which would be huge. I mean, if you're able to make that happen, it gives you that extra roster spot on the 53-man roster. So Leary, you know, is he going to be able to be accurate enough? And can he, you know, prove that he's worth a developmental spot?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I want to go back to Wiggins, and obviously first-round pick, but we saw him at the camps, and they're wearing sweatpants, and man, you can tell how skinny he is. And I know there's, after seeing Emmanuel Forbes a year ago in Washington, and he was a first-round pick, skinny, and he did not. Now, he's not as fast as Wiggins, but it did give me a little pause when they took him because Forbes is so recent. But I am really curious to see how he comes out of the gate. Like, is he a guy they trust to be on the field a lot when the season starts? Because I think we all know they want to put Marlon inside.
For sure. I mean, that's definitely the goal at some point this year. Now, is Wiggins going to be ready week one? I don't know. And this is where I'd say, even though he's a first round pick, we have seen the Ravens in the past slow play these guys in the secondary. It happened with Kyle Hamilton. He wasn't playing much, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into the season. And then at the end of the year, played a lot. Marlon Humphrey, he didn't play much in the first half of the season as a rookie and then played a lot down the stretch. So I would say if Wiggins isn't on the outside week one, I wouldn't be pressing the panic button. But no, I mean, I think it's fair to have some concern in that. And heck, Ken, I remember being out there for the Washington-Baltimore joint practices, and I remember Zay Flowers torching Emmanuel Forbes during one-on-one there, where I was thinking, oh,
Odell kind of put him in the blender a little bit as well.
But no, I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about those one-on-ones with Wiggins as I am, you know, how's his body going to hold up in run support? How's his body going to hold up in the open field tackling-wise?
Training camp gets started on the 20th, but once again, rookies report on July 13th. That's 5 days away. Coming up next, though, it's T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
Orioles played their final game at the Coliseum, one game under 500 all time at the Coliseum after all of that. And it is very sad that they are moving away from Oakland, but we do know that the Coliseum, it gets a little bit of a bad rap. Ken, you saw a game there.
I've seen a baseball and a football game there.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to hear from the people. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. We'll get into it next on Inside Access.
It's a Monday edition of T-Bone Time. TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
Question for today's TMI. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. We'll take your calls in a few. I have never been to the Coliseum, Ken. You have been to the Coliseum multiple times.
Yeah, I was at the AFC Championship game, Ravens and Raiders, obviously. And what was that, January of 2001?
Yep.
Sat at the top of Mount Davis.
Oh.
Cops came up to us in the late third, early fourth quarter, said if the game continues to go the way it's going, have us escort you to the bathroom if you need to go.
God.
True story.
Oh,
it was a weird vibe. This is 2001. I was there with my dad. It's the only time I did not wear like a jersey to a football game.
Yeah.
I wore jeans and a polo because I was advised not
sure.
to wear. So that was interesting. I also went to an Oriole game there, I guess like 04.
With the 30th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Nate Wiggins, defensive back, Clemson.
We take you back to draft night where the Ravens took Nate Wiggins, the speedy, skinny corner from Clemson in the first round, and we bring that up because the rookies report for training camp in just 5 days. And with that in mind, Bone, who are you looking forward to seeing rookie-wise at this training camp?
Obviously, everyone's excited to see a first-round pick every single year. So, I mean, you can start with Nate Wiggins. And something that I'm interested in seeing, I know you are too, Ken, is, hey, the competitive juice is flowing, those one-on-one matchups. We know that Nate Wiggins is not one to lack confidence. So I think going up against Zay Flowers, which is both of them similar body types. But, you know, what does he look like from the get-go? What does he look like when pads come on? You know, that's everyone's biggest concern with Wiggins.
Yeah.
Is that size going to hold up? How is he going to perform in run support? How is he going to perform in open field tackling? So Wiggins is the obvious one. But, I mean, a lot of these guys have, you know, plenty of interest for me. I mean, Roger Rosengarten, is he going to be ready for prime time? Is he going to be ready to start week one against the Chiefs at right tackle? And, you know, Adisa Isaac, what is his role going to be? Is he going to prove that he could be a rotational pass rusher for this team?
No, the obvious are there. And Wiggins, I am curious to see how long before somebody takes a swing at Nate Wiggins. I think in the heat of summer, these drills get started. He is not one to back down. And if it doesn't happen during actual camp, I think it's going to happen when they have one of these practices against another team before.
The Packers.
Yeah, the Packers. Yes. DeVontaze Walker. I want to see what this kid. Tez Walker was a kid that transferred to Carolina. He wasn't eligible at first. Finally got his shot, played very well. Fourth round pick. I'm interested to see what he looks like. I've been telling you this for a while. I want to see what TJ Tampa looks like because he's one of those guys where the mock drafts and the NFL team sort of differed, and we'll find out who's right here. But TJ Tampa, they got two corners, Wiggins and Tampa. And how good are these kids early? Because let's face it, Marlon Humphrey's birthday is today, by the way.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Marlon. And hopefully his birthday present is health because he did not have it a year ago, Bum.
And hopefully he's ready to go day one or else the alarms will be going off for me a little bit. But no, both of those guys as well. And DeVontaze Walker, the 4.36 speed, where this receiving core right now, Ken, I mean, do they have a guy that can consistently take the top off a defense? And you know, Bateman, they took a lot of deep shots with him last year, but just didn't have much success when Lamar threw to him. Zay, not necessarily his forte, and same with Nelson Aguilar. Where can DeVontaze Walker as a rookie provide this offense with some splash plays because they don't really have that guy that can stretch the field.
No, it's not Rashad Bateman. As much as they try for it to be Rashad Bateman, I think that ship has sailed. If there's going to be a splash guy, unless it's Isaiah Likely down the seam kind of thing, maybe. But of the wide receivers, it's Zay's more of a yak guy. It's not Aguilar, as you said, and I'm sorry. I can't see how it's Rashad Bateman at this point. It's got to be Walker.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of I'll believe it when I see it with Rashad Bateman for whatever reason, and it's not all on Bateman, but Lamar and Bateman just have not been on the same page. Hopefully, both of them can stay healthy and get a full training camp together, and that can maybe help their chemistry out.
Yeah, if they both could stay healthy, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun, Ken. That would be fun. And then you get to the later round guys where Rasheen Ali, we know that he had a lot of explosive plays in his college career, but what's the issue with him? Fumbles. And we know that John Harbaugh, and really what head coach is fond of them.
Nah.
But that's how you can quickly get in the doghouse for John Harbaugh. But who knows? I mean, he might have an opportunity, Ken, especially early on in the season, where, you know, you got Justice Hill, of course, and Keaton Mitchell. He's not going to be ready week one. John Harbaugh pretty much said that. Early on in the season, if Keaton Mitchell's on PUP, I mean, Ali, if he sticks
Ali,
on special teams,
yeah.
I mean, he could be up come game day.
No, Ali's an interesting one because of the Keaton Mitchell situation. And Keaton Mitchell will likely not be ready for the start of the season. And who is going to be like, could he give them some third down value? We've talked a lot about how Derrick Henry doesn't play a lot of third downs. Could Ali be the guy? Because Justice Hill is fine, but he's not really an explosive guy. He's not going to give you what Keaton Mitchell could give you. Could Ali possibly give them a little of that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a shot. And first things first, for Ali, he's got to find a way to stick on special teams. That way he can stay active as that number three running back. And assuming he is able to do that, yeah, I mean, I think he'd be in the mix for some touches here and there during games. And then, obviously, we're going to keep an eye on Devin Leary during the preseason.
Hey, I like the way he threw the ball I was out there. He throws it better than Josh Johnson, but I don't know.
But with Leary, if you're Eric DaCosta, if you're John Harbaugh, the hope would be that he's your backup quarterback in 2025. Now, they did pass that new rule, Ken, where even though, let's just say hypothetically, Devin Leary's on the team's practice squad and they only carry those two quarterbacks,
he can dress.
He can still dress, which would be huge. I mean, if you're able to make that happen, it gives you that extra roster spot on the 53-man roster. So Leary, you know, is he going to be able to be accurate enough? And can he, you know, prove that he's worth a developmental spot?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I want to go back to Wiggins, and obviously first round pick, but we saw him at the camps, and they're wearing sweatpants, and man, you can tell how skinny he is. And I know there's after seeing Emmanuel Forbes a year ago in Washington, and he was a first round pick, skinny, and he did not. Now he's not as fast as Wiggins. But it did give me a little pause when they took him because Forbes is so recent. But I am really curious to see how he comes out of the gate. Like, is he a guy they trust to be on the field a lot when the season starts? Because I think we all know they want to put Marlon inside.
For sure. I mean, that's definitely the goal at some point this year. Now, is Wiggins going to be ready week one? I don't know. And this is where I'd say, even though he's a first round pick, we have seen the Ravens in the past slow play these guys in the secondary. It happened with Kyle Hamilton. He wasn't playing much, you know, 4 or 5 weeks into the season. And then at the end of the year, played a lot. Marlon Humphrey, he didn't play much in the first half of the season as a rookie and then played a lot down the stretch. So I would say if Wiggins isn't on the outside week one, I wouldn't be pressing the panic button. But no, I mean, I think it's fair to have some concern in that. And heck, Ken, I remember being out there for the Washington-Baltimore joint practices, and I remember Zay Flowers torching Emmanuel Forbes during one-on-one.
Yes.
There, where I was thinking,
oh, Odell kind of put him in the blender a little bit as well.
But no, I mean, I'm not necessarily worried about those one-on-ones with Wiggins as I am, you know, how's his body going to hold up in run support? How's his body going to hold up in the open field tackling-wise?
Training camp gets started on the 20th, but once again, rookies report on July 13th. That's 5 days away. Coming up next, though, it's T-Bone time. TMI with T-I-M. What you got?
Orioles played their final game at the Coliseum. One game under 500 all time at the Coliseum after all of that. And it is very sad that they are moving away from Oakland, but we do know that the Coliseum, it gets a little bit of a bad rap. Ken, you saw a game there.
I've seen a baseball and a football game there.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to hear from the people. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. We'll get into it next on Inside Access.
It's a Monday edition of T-Bone Time. TMI with T-I-M, and the floor is yours.
Question for today's TMI. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. We'll take your calls in a few. I have never been to the Coliseum, mm-hmm. Ken. You have been to the Coliseum multiple times.
I was at the AFC Championship game, Ravens and Raiders, obviously. And what was that, January of 2001?
Yep.
Sat at the top of Mount Davis.
Oh.
Cops came up to us in the late third, early fourth quarter, said if the game continues to go the way it's going, have us escort you to the bathroom if you need to go.
God.
True story.
Oh,
it was a weird vibe. This is 2001. I was there with my dad. It's the only time I did not wear like a jersey to a football game.
Yeah.
I wore jeans and a polo because I was advised not to wear. So that was interesting. I also went to an Oriole game there. I guess like 04, I saw Eric Bedard throw like a 7 innings of 2-hit baseball. It's a dump.
Yeah.
It was an absolute dump then. And now we're 20 years later. It can't be better. Like it was a disgustingly bad stadium. Now, I also went to the Vet a bunch as a kid, going to prep school outside of Philly, and we did not have a football team. I was an Eagles fan. And I sort of, like, I get it. I was there when Mike Quick tore both his ACLs untouched because the turf was so bad. I have good memories of the Vet, but I understand that was a dump too.
And the Vet had a jail in the stadium, right?
In the basement, that, yeah, underneath, yes, yes, the holding cells, yes.
So are there
with good reason?
Yeah, those two are the worst.
The Coliseum's just it's so far above everywhere else for me. And I'm trying to think where else I've been like that I would say is awful, but that one stands out.
I've been to the Trop, which gets a bad rap, and that is not a good stadium
in the slightest.
The Bills Stadium is kind of a dump. I've been there.
They've been begging for a new one for a while. They're finally getting it.
I will say this, and maybe I'm in the minority here. I get it. The history, everything, that's cool. I think Fenway's a dump.
See, I love Fenway. You don't understand history, Bon. You're too young. I don't like the seats. Like, they're built for like 320-pound people. I love it. Like, I loved the old Yankee Stadium because for me, as someone who loves baseball, I feel the history of the stadium.
No, and I get that aspect to it, but like,
young Ben, I think, is on your side.
Not at all. Fenway and Wrigley are awesome.
Wrigley's great too. Yeah.
I've been to Lambeau Field. Lambeau Field is incredible. And that stadium is old as hell. And they have done a fantastic job with the maintenance, with the upkeep, all of that. I've been to Fenway a few times.
I love Fenway. And I love Wrigley.
I like Fenway too. Wrigley was incredible. Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't said FedEx yet.
It is a crap hole. And I've been there multiple times. It's funny. I haven't been there a lot for games. I've been there for concerts. Like I saw McCartney there with my dad years ago. I saw Coldplay there twice. It sucks getting in and out of that place.
One way in, one way out.
I saw the Commanders win their Super Bowl last year in the preseason against the Ravens.
Pretty good. Nice. Yeah, that is a dump.
Is that the worst for you, Ben?
By far. It's unreal. It's terrible.
Yeah. And remember when the sewage started coming out of the pipes?
That was
a good luck.
They got a laundry list there. 410-583-1057. Sean is in San Diego. Sean, you're on the fan.
Hey. I'm just in Maryland, living in Maryland now. But, so Oakland Alameda just sucks. Plumbing doesn't work. People puking, you know, next to the concession lines. You know, I'm a Charger fan, so I'm supposed to hate the Raiders.
Yeah.
But it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And it's the reason, you know, Jack Murphy was also outdated. And it's the reason the Chargers aren't there.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, that was terrible. Half the concession stands weren't open and shit.
Oh, okay. All right. Mike is in Finksburg. Mike, you're on the Fan.
Hey, I'm a little older than all y'all, so I've been to RFK.
Okay.
I was at RFK, yeah.
Redskins to Senators. What a crap hole. I mean, give me a break. They should have blew the place up way back when.
It's and appreciate the call. I was at RFK. I'm trying to think what year that was. It was one of the years the Eagles needed the Redskins to beat the Vikings so the Eagles could still have a shot to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
It was one of the years Randall Cunningham was hurt. I think Jim McMahon or Bubby Brister was the Eagles quarterback. And so I went to a Redskins game to see them win, giving the Eagles a shot to get in. I think it never worked out. They didn't get in. But alas, this was so long ago before stadiums got nice. Yeah, it was a dump, but everything was a dump back then.
Well, I wish I could have seen Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium is cool, but it was a dump.
But at the end, yeah, that's what I'm saying. At the end, I feel like people thought it was kind of a dumpy. Rashawn, you've been to a lot of stadiums, man. What's the worst for you?
Yeah, man, over 40 combined between both sports fans.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I've been to Oakland Coliseum three times as a Cowboys, Ravens, and an Orioles fan, and I kind of like it. Be honest,
really,
because I like the environment. I like the rowdiness of the people, the fans, and
you like fights, Rashawn. That's it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, listen, it kind of reminds me of Memorial Stadium. You know, my uncle used to take Memorial Stadium when I was growing up, and it's like when you go to the bathroom, you got to pee in a trough and everything. Yeah. Man, it was just that old school. I'm more of an old school nostalgic guy. I'm not with all these new these new stadiums and everything.
Well, you say the Cowboys Stadium, man. Jerry's
that's
World.
Different. Jerry's that's World different. Is different, man. Okay. You know, but you know what stadium I don't like though is what's that MetLife Stadium?
The Giants Stadium. Yeah,
that's just big and bland. No character to it. Overpriced. The food is nasty, and you know, and the Giants suck. So,
hey, Rashawn. More importantly, did you get to work on time on Saturday?
Almost barely, man. Messing with you, Ken. Golly, man.
Yeah.
When I say no more drinks, Ken, no more, man.
Oh, man.
Day after bed coming, Ken.
Yeah, I know. Tomorrow comes for everyone.
Yeah, man. But
good to see you.
You, man.
Yeah.
Hey, good to see you, man.
Hey, yeah. Rashawn. Thanks, man. One more.
Ran into him Friday night.
Yeah. Hey. Matt is in Westminster. Matt, you're on the Fan.
How you doing, gentlemen? Hey, just touching on that guy, Memorial Stadium. I'm a little older, like you said, the Charles, but the Colts games with the green bleachers on the left field line, and, you know, it's just crazy. But we were there for the Steelers when Donald Kerner flew to Dan.
Oh, the plane, yeah.
Thank God my brothers and uncles sat in Section 7. Thank God we lost. They got out of there, but that man would have killed a bunch of them. But the obstructed seats and the damn green bleachers in left field, it was just, you know.
But it was charming back then.
Yeah, but the best thing, we had great teams back in the day. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it wasn't too bad going to a crappy stadium, but it was good. And then if you got the parking, we called it the parking lot across Memorial Stadium. If you got in the middle, you were waiting.
They park you in.
Anytime I see an aerial view of Memorial Stadium and just the park, like, who thought that would be okay? I mean, if you're in the middle of that square, like, do you just wait 7 hours for the parking lot to clear out? I mean, that had to be miserable.
That was, and you just brought a lot of beer. They used to get kegs and just leave them in the truck and then, you know, just sit there. So it was an all-day experience. If they had a 105 football game, you got dinner at like 9, and then you didn't get home until like 7, 8 o'clock.
Oh, at least. Thanks for the call.
And there weren't 1 o'clock football games because of those stupid blue laws back in the day.
Yeah.
Because they played at 2 o'clock, I think.
Yeah,
silly.
Yeah, thanks for the call, man.
Hey, that reminds me, and it brings up a story I always have to tell. Like, my dad had tickets to the Colts, and he told me when I was young that because of the violence of football, there was a minimum age requirement to go to NFL football games, and what choice did I have but to believe him?
Yeah.
So I didn't get to go to Colt games with him until the year after they lost to the Raiders in the playoffs, goes to the post, which I think is 77. I started going in 78. Burt Jones got hurt in the preseason. They sucked every year after until they moved. Yeah. Like, I never saw a good Colts team. I went to every home game basically until the last year, and I was away at school, but then I came back and went to the last game where they beat the Oilers. But, like, I was there for the 2008-1 year. I was there, like, they beat New England twice, week 1 and week 16, 2-14, like the Kenneth Sims Bowl. I was at those garbage games.
And you were at the 1 year we talk about? They played, the Broncos twice?
Yeah. The last year. That was that. I did not go. So that's the last year I was out of town. I came back for the last game. But their last year in Baltimore, for some reason that nobody can explain to me, they played the Broncos twice. Go look it up. It's there.
We've done it.
Coming up next, Orioles got 3 All-Stars. They got some snubs. Other teams feel like there's some snubs. We're going to take a look at those all-star rosters. Who got in? Who didn't? It's our TWIB notes next here on The Fan. It's a Monday edition of T-Bone Time. TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
Question for today's TMI. What is the worst stadium you have ever been to? 410-583-1057. We'll take your calls in a few. I have never been to the Coliseum, mm-hmm. Ken. You have been to the Coliseum multiple times.
I was at the AFC Championship game, Ravens and Raiders, obviously. And what was that, January of 2001?
Yep.
Sat at the top of Mount Davis.
Oh.
Cops came up to us in the late third, early fourth quarter, said if the game continues to go the way it's going, have us escort you to the bathroom if you need to go.
God.
True story.
Oh,
it was a weird vibe. This is 2001. I was there with my dad. It's the only time I did not wear like a jersey to a football game.
Yeah.
I wore jeans and a polo because I was advised not to wear. So that was interesting. I also went to an Oriole game there. I guess like 2004, I saw Eric Bedard throw like a 7 innings of 2-hit baseball. It's a dump.
Yeah.
It was an absolute dump then. And now we're 20 years later. It can't be better. Like it was a disgustingly bad stadium. Now, I also went to the Vet a bunch as a kid, going to prep school outside of Philly, and we did not have a football team. I was an Eagles fan. And I sort of, like, I get it. I was there when Mike Quick tore both his ACLs untouched because the turf was so bad. I have good memories of the Vet, but I understand that was a dump too.
And the Vet had a jail in the stadium, right?
In the basement, underneath. Yes, the holding cells. Yes.
So were there
with good reason?
Those two are the worst.
The Coliseum's just it's so far above everywhere else for me. And I'm trying to think where else I've been like that I would say is awful, but that one stands out.
I've been to the Trop, which gets a bad rap, and that is not a good stadium
in the slightest.
The Bills Stadium is kind of a dump. I've been there.
They've been begging for a new one for a while. They're finally getting it.
I will say this, and maybe I'm in the minority here. I get it. The history, everything, that's cool. I think Fenway's a dump.
See, I love Fenway. You don't understand history, Bon. You're too young.
I
don't like the seats. Like, they're built for like 5'3", 120-pound people. I love it. Like, I loved the old Yankee Stadium because for me, as someone who loves baseball, I feel the history of the stadium.
No, and I get that aspect to it, but like,
young Ben, I think, is on your side.
Not at all. Fenway and Wrigley are awesome.
Wrigley's great too. Yeah.
I've been to Lambeau Field. Lambeau Field is incredible, and that stadium is old as hell, and they have done a fantastic job with the maintenance, with the upkeep, all of that. I've been to Fenway a few times.
I love Fenway. And I love Wrigley.
I like Fenway too. Wrigley was incredible. Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't said FedEx yet.
It is a crap hole. And I've been there multiple times. It's funny. I haven't been there a lot for games. I've been there for concerts. Like I saw McCartney there with my dad years ago. I saw Coldplay there twice. It sucks getting in and out of that place.
One way in, one way out.
I saw the Commanders win their Super Bowl last year in the preseason against the Ravens. Pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah, that is a dump.
Is that the worst for you, Ben?
By far. It's unreal. It's terrible.
Yeah. And remember when the sewage started coming out of the pipes? That was a good luck.
They got a laundry list there. 410-583-1057. Sean is in San Diego. Sean, you're on the Fan.
Hey. I'm just in Maryland, living in Maryland now. But, Oakland Alameda just sucks. Plumbing doesn't work. People puking, next to the concession lines. You know, I'm a Charger fan, so I'm supposed to hate the Raiders.
Yeah.
But it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And it's the reason, you know, Jack Murphy was also outdated, and it's the reason the Chargers aren't there.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, that was terrible. Half the concession stands weren't open and shit. There's
one.
All right.
Mike is in Finksburg. Mike, you're on the Fan.
Hey, I'm a little older than all y'all, so I've been to RFK.
Okay.
I was at RFK, yeah.
Redskins to Senators. What a crap hole. I mean, give me a break. They should have blew the place up way back when.
Appreciate the call. I was at RFK. I'm trying to think what year that was. It was one of the years the Eagles needed the Redskins to beat the Vikings so the Eagles could still have a shot to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
It was one of the years Randall Cunningham was hurt. I think Jim McMahon or Bubby Brister was the Eagles quarterback. And so I went to a Redskins game to see them win, giving the Eagles a shot to get in. I think it never worked out. They didn't get in. But alas, this was so long ago before stadiums got nice. Yeah, it was a dump, but everything was a dump back then.
Well, I wish I could have seen Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium was cool, but it was a dump.
But at the end, yeah, that's what I'm saying. At the end, I feel like people thought it was kind of a dumpy. Rashawn, you've been to a lot of stadiums, man. What's the worst for you?
Yeah, man, over 40 combined between both sports fan.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I've been to Oakland Coliseum three times as a Cowboys, Ravens, and an Orioles fan, and I kind of like it. Be honest,
really,
because I like the environment, I like the rowdiness of the people, the fans, and
you like fights, Rashawn. That's it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, listen, it kind of reminds me of Memorial Stadium. You know, my uncle used to take Memorial Stadium when I was growing up, and it's like when you go to the bathroom, you got to pee in a trough and everything. Yeah. Yeah. Man, it was just that old school. I'm more of an old school nostalgia guy. I'm not with all these new stadiums and everything.
Well, you say the Cowboys Stadium, man. Jerry's
that's
World.
Different. Jerry's that's World different. Is different, man. Okay. You know, but you know what stadium I don't like though is what's that MetLife Stadium?
The Giants Stadium. Yeah.
That's just big and bland. No character to it. Overpriced. The food is nasty, and you know when the Giants suck. So
hey, Rashawn. More importantly, did you get to work on time on Saturday?
Almost barely, man. Messing with you, Ken. Golly, man.
Yeah.
When I say no more drinks, Ken, no more, man.
Oh, man.
Day after bed coming, Ken.
Yeah, I know. Tomorrow comes for everyone.
Yeah, man. But
good to see you,
man.
Yeah.
Hey, good to see you, man.
Hey, yeah. Rashawn. Thanks, man. One more.
Ran into him Friday night.
Yeah. Hey. Matt is in Westminster. Matt, you're on the Fan.
How you doing, gentlemen? Hey, just touching on that guy, Memorial Stadium. I'm a little older, like you said, the Charles, but the Colts games with the green bleachers on the left field line, and you know, it's just crazy. But we were there for the Steelers when Donald Kerner flew to Dan.
Oh, the plane, yeah.
Thank God my brothers and uncles sat in Section 7. Thank God we lost. They got out of there, but that man would have killed a bunch of them. But the obstructed seats and the damn green bleachers in left field. It was just, you know.
But it was charming back then.
Yeah, but the best thing, we had great teams back in the day. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it wasn't too bad going to a crappy stadium, but it was good. And then if you got the parking, we called it the parking lot across Memorial Stadium. If you got in the middle, you were waiting.
They park you in.
Anytime I see an aerial view of Memorial Stadium and just the park, like, who thought that would be okay? I mean, if you're in the middle of that square, like, do you just wait 7 hours for the parking lot to clear out? I mean, that had to be miserable.
That was, and you just brought a lot of beer. They used to get kegs and just leave them in the truck and then, you know, just sit there. So it was all-day experience. If they had a 105 football game, you got dinner at, like, 9, and then you didn't get home until, like, 7, 8 o'clock.
Oh, at least. Thanks for the call.
And there weren't 1 o'clock football games because of those stupid blue laws back in the day.
Yeah
they played 2 o'clock, I think.
Yeah,
silly. Yeah,
thanks for the call.
Hey, that reminds me, and it brings up a story I always have to tell. Like, my dad had tickets to the Colts, and he told me when I was young that because of the violence of football, there was a minimum age requirement to go to NFL football games. And what choice did I have but to believe him?
Yeah.
So I didn't get to go to Colt games with him until the year after they lost to the Raiders in the playoffs, goes to the post, which I think is 77. I started going in 78. Burt Jones got hurt in the preseason. They sucked every year after until they moved. Yeah. Like, I never saw a good Colts team. I went to every home game basically until the last year, and I was away at school, but then I came back and went to the last game where they beat the Oilers. But like, I was there for the 2008-1 year. I was there, like, they beat New England twice, week 1 and week 16, 2 and 14, like the Kenneth Sims Bowl. I was at those garbage games.
And you were at the 1 year we talk about, they played what, the Broncos twice?
Yeah. The last year. That was that. I did not go. So that's the last year I was out of town. I came back for the last game. But their last year in Baltimore, for some reason that nobody can explain to me, they played the Broncos twice. Go look it up. It's there.
We've done it.
Coming up next, Orioles got 3 All-Stars. They got some snubs. Other teams feel like there's some snubs. We're going to take a look at those All-Star rosters, who got in, who didn't. It's our TWIB Notes next here on The Fan.